This is Adam Nutter.
And this is Greg Trout.
And we're Nerds with Words, and you are listening to the BS Podcast Network.
Welcome to the Two Bobs Podcast. Two everyday guys talking about everyday stuff, like their latest tech obsessions, sports, current events, and more. And now, the two people who are recipients of the most eye rolls in history. Please welcome the Two Bobs.
Hi, welcome to the Two Bobs. I'm Rob.
And I'm Robert. And you're listening to episode 40 for Monday, November 6th, 2017.
This week on the Two Bobs, we're going to talk about the beer we're drinking. Also, the internet has weighed in on the debate of, are Cheetos really chips?
We'll talk about our experiences ordering the iPhone X and compare that to some of the hottest tech from 20 years ago. And of course, a crazy news story.
Now, I noticed you're wearing a t-shirt with a Superman logo on it. That would have been better for last week as you were trying to be Spider-Man by actually having a shirt that had Spider-Man actually on the shirt. See, that you could say I'm Superman with that one.
Yeah, it's pretty much the same thing, just a t-shirt with something. But I guess you're right. This is more of a Superman costume versus the other that, you're right, just had Spider-Man on it.
Well, so I'm wearing my Golden Girls t-shirt. Stay as golden. I do. Speaking of Golden Girls, so... funny story happened today. I was with a buddy. Well, first off, I'm obsessed with Whole Foods sushi. And
Amazon.
They have pretty good stuff. I was hoping I'd get free 2-day shipping with my Prime membership by entering the store and buying things. Apparently, that's not how it works. But and I get it. You know, it's a grocery store. There's definitely better sushi that I can get around town and stuff like that. And I get it. But it's easy. It's right across the street from my office. So I, you know, usually probably once a week at least, I go over there and get some sushi. So I'm with a buddy, a colleague of mine. And we go into the store. We get in my truck. We're leaving. As we're driving away from the building through the parking lot, I look over and there is a car parked literally like... directly up against the front door of the building. And there's just this old lady who's just like sitting in there chilling with somebody else in her car. It's one of those where there's like an actual, like there's a driving lane between the store and the parking spaces. And there's a whole parking lot just like anywhere else, but she's parked up on the sidewalk directly in front of the main entrance to Whole Foods today. And I couldn't help.
And I'm a pretty hip young mom, okay?
Elderly listener, I don't think it would even go that far. But anyway, I immediately just slammed on the brakes, pulled out my phone, snapped some pictures. I'll put it up on social, but, it was just some crazy old lady. I hope that I get to the age where I just stop giving a shit what the rules are or what anybody thinks. If I want to park closer than the handicap spots to the building, I'm going to do it.
Now, did she have handicap spots on there? I mean, did she have a handicap plate?
I didn't look that closely, to be honest with you. Judging by her age, I'd say she was definitely probably at an age where she maybe shouldn't be driving anymore, especially if that's where you're parking, not realizing. I feel like she probably just didn't realize that, like, you're not supposed to park. I mean, any closer, she'd be inside the store. So anyway, I'm going to put it up on our social feed so you guys can see this, but definitely worth a look because it's pretty damn funny.
Well, I'll keep an eye out for it. Did you have a good Halloween?
I did. Yeah. The kids had a good time. We had a good time. Hung out with some neighbors, walked around. I decided to go as Donald Trump this year.
Uh-oh.
Well, I wanted to be an idiot, and he's the king of them, so I figure, if might as well. So, but what was
this funny? Is an island surrounded by
water,
big water, ocean water.
So what's funny though is I'm walking around, people are just they're looking at me, they're staring at me, they're laughing. Like the number of times I forgot I was in a Donald Trump costume and just I'm like, what's your fucking problem? Why? What are you looking at? And then I'd have to keep reminding myself, oh yeah, I'm dressed as the world's biggest and most famous idiot. So got some chuckles, or I'd get some people that kind of snickered, and I'd look at them, go like, you're fired or something like that, and they had a good time with it. So
I saw the picture of it. It looked pretty good. I mean it's realistic. Your hand gestures, as I told you, were a little bit off, not quite what I was expecting, but no, listen. I mean you said there were no I'm telling you what's right. You got to do the one like this where he's got the doing it.
Donald Trump has three different hand gestures. I'll show you right now.
You tell me.
He has the one finger, the pointer finger, pointed toward the sky.
That's the short finger, though, yeah, right?
He has the forefinger and the thumb pressed together with the other fingers pointed up,
like the OK.
And he has the flat hand wave too, so
like the hand chop.
Well, it's a sideways hand chop though. It's not up and down. It's side to side. He'll do that as well.
He's pushing the cat off the counter, basically.
It's exactly what he's doing. He's pushing. You know, when he's not grabbing pussies, he's pushing them off of counters.
Well, I didn't dress as anything. I completely forgot. I pulled out. I have a pumpkin costume. Well, it's not really a costume, but it's a T-shirt. You know, all my costumes are T-shirts basically. But it's kind of like the jack-o'-lantern where it's orange and it's got the big face. So every year around October, I'm usually around my heaviest. So I actually look like a pumpkin when I put it on. And I had it set out and I didn't wear it all day because I just didn't feel like wearing it. And I went to go put it on. Completely forgot, and we're about halfway around the neighborhood when Melissa goes, "Hey, you're not wearing your pumpkin shirt." Oh well, that's fine.
What are you gonna do? It's for the kids anyway, right?
Yeah, it's dark. You'll see the orange, but that's pretty much it. But it was fun walking around, seeing all the different kids and their different costumes and a lot of creative stuff. I don't think I saw the same thing twice, which was pretty cool because a lot of times you kind of have the one thing that most of the kids have. And this year I didn't see that. It seemed like everybody had something different, some really cool ones and some fairly simple ones. But overall, I was pretty impressed with the creativity that everybody had.
I think I still had the best costume, though. I mean, my kids won for cuteness, but I lived the role both with my friends and strangers that I met on the streets.
You really got into your character then.
I really did.
Now, could you deal with the hatred, or were you able to just kind of set that aside and be yourself for a little while?
No, I just went along with it. I told people, I said, listen, I'm going to build a wall. I build better walls than anybody else, and I'm going to put you on the other side of the wall and deport you as soon as I'm done. Like I kept saying stuff like that. But
you had plenty of material to choose from.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's just the guy that's every day gives me something to say. Oh, man.
Rather than go too far down this road, because we kind of promise so we don't go too far down it. But I guess, you know, in the spirit of Halloween, that was your costume. What I do to deal with watching the news is I like to enjoy a beer. So what do you say we dive on in?
Let's do it.
Hey, bartender, another beer!
Donald Trump is a very, very deep rabbit hole. I'd rather just move on and drink beer.
It's, you know, it's polarizing, really, regardless of which side you're on. If you're on his side or not his side or somewhere in the middle, it always evokes some emotion. And I, you know, certainly welcome anybody to have their opinions on it. And, you know, we can always discuss it civilly. But anyhow, we'll leave that for another. We'll just leave that for somebody else's show.
Sounds good to me. Hey, well,
like this time.
Yeah.
What are you drinking?
What am I drinking? I am drinking a and I've had this brewery before. Brewery Vivant. I drank one of their other beers at some point. I'm not going to look behind me. Check the fucking, what are we drinking?
The bottle's probably missing anyway.
Probably. No, I still got it. Why do you keep bringing that up? That one fucking breakfast stout that disappeared to this day bothers me. And every time I go and see it, I'm like, I should buy it. I should buy a six pack of it just so I can get the can back up on my shelf back here. Yeah, I know. It's a good beer, but anyway. Today, I am drinking a Velvet Stud Oak Aged Stout by Brewery Vivant. It is 7.2% alcohol by volume. It's available in a can or on tap. The website says, aging in neutral oak barrels rounds out the edges of this Belgian-style stout, giving it a smooth, velvety character. The element of time coaxes some complexity out of the wood, and beautifully blends with the dark malts in this beer. Expect notes of chocolate, hints of freshly roasted coffee with a dry oak finish. The extra steps of wood aging can drive our brewers crazy, but at the end of the day, being proud of your favorite craft makes it all worthwhile. Tasty notes, full-bodied stout with chocolate notes, fresh roasted coffee, and dry oak finish. And it pairs with dark chocolate truffles, a hearty stew, coffee rubbed steak. Never had that. Sounds good, though. Vanilla ice cream float, if you're into that sort of thing. It actually says that on the website, too. So I started drinking it a little bit of it already. It's a good beer. It's dry. It's a thicker, you know, thicker style. It's very malty. Definitely is a little bit of chocolate in there, some coffee, but it's, I'm having trouble placing the flavor. It's like they ground up wood into a fine particle. Like there's nice. Sawdust inside of the drink here. I mean, you really do get that like oaky, smoky type of finish on there. So it has a little bit of a bite to it, just a little bit. It's a good beer. I rated it I rated it a 3.25 on Untappd, which means our general guideline is it's a good beer, but probably like I won't go out of my way to get it. I definitely will buy other beer ahead of this one. But if it's offered to me, I'll certainly drink it. I got a 4-pack of it. I'll finish the 4-pack for sure. So it's a good beer. It's a little dry for me though.
It sounds a lot like a red wine almost, where it's got the oak and it's got the dryness and the bite to it.
I do kind of get that. I guess it's a little bit confusing for my palate because I am a red wine drinker. I like my cabs. I like my Merlots. So I guess it's a little bit confusing because I do liken it a little bit to wine, just that dryness of it and that smokiness of it. But again, it's a good beer. Certainly recommend it, especially if you like the drier stuff. It's not my favorite beer just because of my personal taste, but certainly a recommended beer if you're into the smokier stuff.
Sounds interesting. I don't know that I can get it down here, but you finish it up and see how it changes throughout the show. Maybe you start to like it a little bit more. Or maybe it goes down, kind of like mine did a couple weeks ago.
We'll see. So far, I'm still sticking to my 3.25. What are you drinking? It's a big surprise. Big surprise this week.
Well, I've got a Shorts Brewing Company Soft Parade. Soft Parade is a fruit rye ale brewed with rye flakes and loaded with pureed strawberries, blueberries, raspberries, and blackberries. This rose-colored ale... No, I don't have that. I couldn't get through it. I was waiting for you to start laughing, but
so I mean,
the Soft Parade's always going to have a special spot just because it's pretty damn funny.
So my wife. So if you don't know the backstory, my wife, my beautiful wife, she hasn't quite been into the craft beer scene. So she's been experimenting with different flavors and different types to try to like some of this better beer. So we were at a restaurant. She ordered a Soft Parade. I had ordered one like a couple months back, and she kind of remembered the flavor and kind of liked it. So we were out to eat a month ago, we'll call it, and she ordered one, and she fell in love with it. Like, and we went to the store, the liquor store afterwards, and she got more and drank even more of the Soft Parade once we got home. And she started an Untappd account, and it's so funny because every single one of her check-ins is Shorts Soft Parade. So we got like a 6-pack of it, and you'll just see 6 check-ins with Shorts Soft Parade and nothing else on her Untappd profile.
Well, yeah, I think I looked at it on Untappd just to get the exact name of it because I couldn't remember, and I saw it said Friends, and it had this really high number, so I just had to laugh. But I don't know. For some reason, Soft Parade doesn't seem like a beer name.
It's a very...
Every time I say it, I just start to laugh. So I thought it was funny. And then I pulled it up just to see. And it's, yeah, pureed strawberries, blueberries. So it's probably almost like, in my head, it sounds like it's a lot like a wine cooler kind of thing with just those really fruity flavors in there. So it's probably something you would drink in the summer.
Yeah. But. I mean, again, the one time I got it, it was recommended by the waitress there. And
of course
I didn't like it. Like it was just too sweet and too fruity of a beer for me. But I mean, Shorts is a good brewery, and I like a lot of their different brews, but Soft Parade isn't one of them, but you know, Kelly loves it. So good for her.
Well, what I really have is I'm going to go back to my friends at Ballast Point, which I had, I think it was last week. I had, no, 2 weeks ago, I had one of their pumpkin beers. But this is a recommended beer that we got from our friend Jennifer at the You Don't Know Ish podcast. And she recommended this to me a couple weeks ago. And I was having a difficult time finding it, but I finally did. And it's the Ballast Point Big Eye India Pale Ale. It says, the beer that helped put San Diego IPAs on the map. Our Big Eye IPA is a big hoppy brew. Thanks to the abundance of American Columbus and Centennial varieties, we used a flavor and dry hop. While the English originally added extra hops to preserve their beers for sea travel, We do it for the love of all that bold, intense flavor that makes the India Pale Ale one of our favorite styles. And it's available year-round in 12-ounce bottles, cans, and 22-ounce bottles and on draft. 7% alcohol by volume and a whopping 84 IBUs. And the food pairings are Hawaiian-style tuna poke, as opposed to a regular tuna poke, Penang curry, which I love, and cured meats. So I guess your sausages and, you know, maybe a bologna plate. But Penang curry, I might have that for lunch tomorrow.
Sounds delicious.
It is. It is very hoppy. I've already started to log it in on Untappd, and I put it at a 4. So I like it a lot. So I'd buy it again. I've not really been disappointed by Ballast Point.
Speaking of cured meats, I sent you earlier. Did you see what Kelly got me? She got me Johnsonville Italian sausage. It's red wine and cheese Italian sausage.
Oh, man.
I don't know if I'm going to... I think I'll probably love it because I just like unique flavor. And that just sounds so damn good. So I'll probably be making that for dinner tomorrow night. So anyway, sounds good, though.
Throw it up on the grill.
Yeah, absolutely. So you can find more about the beers we're drinking on Untappd, which is a social network for beer drinkers. Every week, Robert and I, we log the beers that we're drinking on the show. So you can always keep track of what we're drinking on the show and get more information on that and find out where you can find it in your neighborhood, hopefully, if it's something you really like, or just, you know, follow us on there just because you want to. But anyway, I can be found at PhilRoberts33. And where are you at?
I'm at RobertK328.
And as always, thank you. You don't know-ish for sending us in the beer recommendation. But if you have any that you love, as long as it's not Short Soft Parade, feel free to send it in. And, you know, hopefully we can find it in our area and try it on the show.
Well, even if it is a soft parade, send it in. We'd like to find out more people that are drinking this. So Kelly is not all by herself.
I'm sure she's not the only one because they continue to make it. So there's got to be other people who like wine coolers in the form of beer.
Well, I'm sure she's also one that doesn't care whether we like it or not.
She does not.
No,
she likes it. That's all that matters.
Well, last week we had a discussion that came up and it was about the Cheetos. And I wanted to provide a little bit of follow up on that. We discussed whether Cheetos are chips or not after a discussion that I had with my niece. And I put the question out on Twitter and on Facebook, and it's pretty overwhelming. On Twitter, we got 100% vote that Cheetos are not chips. And I didn't count up the Facebook replies, but pretty much all of them, except for my niece who decided to chime in as well, said that Cheetos were not chips. I did have somebody at work who did say that she agreed that Cheetos were chips. Pretty much everybody else said that they're not.
So I had one person at work, a couple people chimed in, said absolutely Cheetos are not chips. So an overwhelming majority. But I did have one colleague that says, no, actually, Cheetos are chips. And I said, how dare you? What are you talking about? Her only argument was that chips are fried. Cheetos are fried. I said, yeah, but. And I think I said some bullshitty like, well, crackers are fried. And she's like, no, they're not. They're fucking baked. And I'm like, all right, well, there goes that argument. But still, I mean,
I thought the same thing about crackers, but they're actually in a whole separate section. And the other comment, I think that was Corey that said that the Cheetos are also in the chip section. So they're in that whole section, but I guess they just call them chips because that's the main thing that you're over there looking for. But yeah. I still don't think that they qualify as a chip. No. So it was kind of funny. It was a lot like the Pepsi and Coke thing that really got people, not really riled up, but really intrigued people into answering this. And everybody was, again, just pretty much matter of fact that they're not chips. So I'm sorry, Cassidy.
Thank you, Cassidy, and for your effort. However, the internet has spoken and Cheetos are not chips.
What else we got today?
Well, let's see here.
You got a special day tomorrow, don't you?
We do. I do. You had your special day a couple weeks ago. Or was it last week? Last Saturday, you picked up your iPhone 8. Tomorrow, which at this point, by the time you're listening to this, will have been last Friday. But tomorrow for us, because it's Thursday evening, my iPhone 10 is coming in the mail. UPS will be delivering it to my office, and I don't need the slow clap. Listen, you're just jealous because you aren't getting one. I'll be able to do an emojis and you won't be able to.
That's fine. You know, we were both up at the same time. I woke up about 2:50 and I don't think I even reminded Melissa that I was doing that. So she's kind of like, what time is it? I said, it's 2:45. What are you doing? So I said, I don't know.
I didn't even say
so. I said, my phone is, she knew that I'd have to get up for it. So I said, now I'm going to go order my phone. So I go downstairs and I sit and try to stay awake and get myself some water. And I'm sitting there with my phone because everybody said, again, go through the app. It's going to be quick. It'll take me 2 minutes. I'll be in and out. I also had my laptop open just in case. So I've got everything fired up. And 3 o'clock comes by and I'm closing the app and opening it and I'm refreshing the app store. And then probably 2 minutes in, I get a screenshot of your order confirmation. You're like, all right, good night. And I have yet to have anything up on any of my screens. So I continue refreshing. I finally get in. I get hung up on the Verizon PIN number that I couldn't remember. And I'm trying every combination, including the one that actually worked. Nothing happened. I finally get through the whole process. We're probably 10, 12 minutes in. It's getting close to 3:15 Eastern time by this time. And I get the processing message and then it pops up and says, we're not quite sure what happened. We don't know if your order is in. We can't process anything right now. Check back in 8 hours. So as luck would have it, I woke up the next morning and my iPhone 10, I got an email that said, we've got no order for you. So I went ahead and just got an 8 Plus rather than wait until December sometime. I like it. I'm excited to see what the 10 people say about it once they've had it, particularly folks like you who have had the larger phone and then go to something that's a little bit different. I'm really curious.
Yeah, so I'm curious too. You know, certainly I've had a Plus. I had a 6 Plus, a 6S Plus, and a 7 Plus. So I've had the larger form factor phone. So it'll be very interesting going back to a smaller, even though the display is negligibly smaller on the 10 than it is on my 7 Plus, but the phone itself, just the bezel and the actual phone is a lot smaller of a form factor. So it'll be interesting for me just getting used to that, getting used to not having a home button and things like that. But speaking of weights, I mean, I think what happened to a lot of people is they got hung up on the carrier. So if you haven't pre-ordered an iPhone or ever ordered an iPhone on your own, what happens is when you go to order it, Apple or Samsung, whoever it is, will ping and verify your account with your carrier. So in my case and in Robert's case, it's Verizon. What was happening though is their servers were so overloaded that the carriers weren't returning a response. So they weren't saying to Apple, yep, he has an account, everything looks good here, go ahead and let him upgrade. So because they weren't able to talk to each other like that, it just wasn't working out for you. So I had been on the iPhone upgrade program, so it was nice. I was able to go in a couple days ahead of time and actually verify my Verizon account, pick out the phone I wanted and things like that, pre-authorize or pre-qualify for everything for the new iPhone upgrade program and the new phone and things like that. So when I went in there, Apple had already verified everything with the carrier. So they're just like, all right, this is the phone you picked out. And like literally 15 seconds after I went into the app or finally got in after I got that, like, you know, that just kind of like placeholder screen that they put on a couple hours before the pre-order starts, just to kind of shut down the store. I was able to just go through. As soon as I got past that, 15 seconds later, I was done. I authenticated with my thumbprint. I was done, and it was a very quick experience. So hopefully for you next year, Robert, if you do want to upgrade to the latest phone again next year, hopefully because you're already on the iPhone upgrade program, next year you can pre-authorize everything ahead of time. Maybe you'll remember your Verizon PIN number, so that way when you go in to do it, actually when the pre-order starts, it'll have everything already set up for you like it did for me this year. So that was really nice. But getting back to the iPhone 10, I'm excited about it. It'll be definitely interesting. You know, I don't know how I'm going to react to having the little notch at the top of the screen. So we'll see if that's really noticeable or that continues to kind of be something that bothers me. From the reviews that are out there, it seems like it's people notice it for a little bit and then it kind of just kind of blends into the rest of the phone. They stop noticing it, but definitely not having a home button Having to use more swipe gestures and things like that will definitely be a different thing for me. But nonetheless, I'm excited about it. I'm a big dork. I like all my tech stuff, and I have all the wireless chargers and everything set up, so I'm ready to roll tomorrow.
You're ready to get it. And one of the cool things about it, if you really think back to one, the original phone or the original iPhone that came out, and where we've been since then, and then also look at where we were before that with the different flip phones and the Razors and the Blackberries, and there was I can't remember the name of it, but there was another smart type phone, and I had the little T-Mobile one that you flipped it around, and I had all those just because I was a tech person. I like to have gadgets, and I call it a MERS, but a man purse that had all my crap in it, had a GPS, a digital camera, and I had my little T-Mobile thing and my regular phone. I just carried all that crap around because I wanted to, and I wanted to have everything, but now all of that is right there in the phone. So one of the things, and you actually found this, which I thought was really neat to kind of go through it, were where we were technology-wise 20 years ago versus where we are. Basically, the cool stuff in 1997 versus what's cool now in 2017 that pretty much everybody already knows, but it's kind of a fun little trip down memory lane to see where we were.
Oh, for sure. So it's an article on CNET, and it says the hottest tech of the Beanie Baby era. So looking back 20 years ago, the intro says, hey, remember 1997? The year had everything. Bill Clinton, Friends, Titanic, and Beanie Babies. And of course, that year also offered some truly cutting-edge technology, or at least it was cutting-edge at the time. Let's travel 20 years into the past and relive the days when the interweb was young, the CD was king, and the cloud was a white fluffy thing that floated above your head while you gabbed on your cordless telephone. And I feel like we should probably take, in Two Bob's fashion, have a contest to see who had the most out of all these things 20 years ago.
I was just thinking about that because there is an age difference here, and I'm in my mid 40s, you're in your mid 30s. So there's a 10-year difference, and I'm wondering how much of that affects.
You'd be surprised how big of a tech dweeb I was in my teens.
Oh, I'm sure. But the difference between being able to buy it on your own versus having to have your parents buy it, although at 24, I don't know how much stuff I could buy on my own anyway. So I'll be curious to see what the result is.
Listen, I worked at Circuit City. I got an employee discount on all this stuff.
Ah, well, that's different. That's almost like you have an advantage.
All right. So first thing on the list is Netscape 1997's web browser of choice. So if you remember Netscape Navigator, it was all the rage back when Windows 95 was the latest craze in... you're pouring a nitro milk stout, I see. Hard pouring the shit out of that.
Now that I know how.
I know. Just gotta...
No, the first... All right, you can
yeah, it is. It's the first thing. The first
one is web TV.
It doesn't. There's no caption though.
I know, but yeah. See, I'm already ahead.
Robert, they're gonna come back and they're going to talk about web TV later on. You do this every time.
I didn't advance through these. You were supposed to not peek, and now you've done it.
I didn't. I guarantee they're going to though, because that's how they always do these.
I never pay attention.
Listen, we'll come back to web TV if it's a thing. Let me do Netscape now. Or do you want to do, Netscape
Navigator? No, you go ahead. All right, you've done a good job so far.
It's an even number, so I'll take it. So the first thing on the list here is Netscape Navigator. It was all the rage way back 20 years ago when Windows 95 was the latest and greatest operating system for PCs. Apple was hardly thought of outside of school districts and a couple government offices, and everybody was using their Compaqs and their Packard Bells and their HPs and their E-machines. So I will say that I absolutely use Netscape Navigator as my main browser for a good amount of time.
I'm trying to remember what the other browser was.
Well, it's pretty much that or Internet Explorer.
Internet Explorer.
But IE wasn't all that great at that point. Like, it didn't really even come out of its shell until, I think, later on in later Windows iterations where people were kind of using it all the time.
I liked Netscape because they also had the Netscape website builder, and I had GeoCities. I don't know if you remember that, but GeoCities where you could host your own website for free, and Netscape had its own, like, website builder or web page builder within it. So I just did everything in the same suite of applications. So Netscape was my number one.
It was a tough ecosystem to beat at the time.
There was not really much going on.
All right. Next.
I just got my International Stout Day badge, by the way. So I'm feeling pretty good about myself.
Congratulations.
This next one, the hottest toy fad of 1997 was the Tamagotchi, a virtual pet on a keychain first popularized in Japan. The toys quickly sold out in stores, such as the KB toys seen here. I never had Tamagotchi. I was probably a little bit too old for it at the time.
Neither did I, actually. Even I was a little bit too old. It was more of a thing for the younger kids that were in like the middle school and elementary school. In 1997, I was in high school, so I never got it. Next year, we have the Gigapets, which I think is just another version of Tamagotchi.
Yeah,
that's stupid. I didn't have that either.
Now, this next one I really wanted, but I never bought one, but it was the mini disc player. Since the late 90s were an awkward transitional time for data storage, this mini disc player is a relic from the era using Sony's ill-fated Magneto optical 1 gigabyte disc. A mini disc could hold 80 minutes of high quality music, but the format never developed a fan base, was quickly outdone by less expensive CD technology. So it's essentially like a cartridge in a way, but within the cartridge was a smaller disc. So the mini disc was, again, just like a portable Walkman type thing, but it never caught on. And I never bought one either.
No, neither did I. I wanted one, especially at that point, something that could hold an entire gigabyte of information was pretty good. I mean, at that time, CDs, they couldn't hold that much.
Yeah, an instant access to where your music was rather than with the cassette, with the forwarding and the rewinding. And portability, you didn't have to worry about, you know, the tapes and just being able to, again, access anything right away was a key feature. But, nope, didn't work. Now, I used the shit out of this one.
Real player. So yeah, I did too. I listened to all the ZDTV streams and back when Leo Laporte was just a guy who was on television, didn't have a podcast because podcasts didn't exist yet. But I mean, it's a streaming media player more or less, and I do remember listening to terrible quality audio over my dial-up connection because you just couldn't get any better than that. But I was a fan.
Yeah, you could pick, like, the little picture here has ABC News, Bloomberg, ZDTV, like you said, TechWeb. So, yeah, they had a lot of little things that were on there. The quality certainly was bad, but it's all you really had outside of regular TVs. That's pretty cool. Now, this one I did have, and it's the Sony PlayStation. It's the original one. It says, launched in 1995, Sony's innovative 32-bit CD-ROM-equipped game system quickly became the driving force of its company in the gaming industry. State-of-the-art 128 kilobit memory cards saved your progress, while DualShock controllers, which came along in 1997, literally rocked your world. And that was pretty cool, having the controllers actually vibrate depending on what you were doing was pretty neat. But yeah, I had one of these. I only had a couple games for it.
I'm going to admit, I didn't have a Sony PlayStation. At that point, I think I had a GameCube. Probably was what I had. Now, maybe, I don't think GameCube was out yet. It might have been like a Sega Genesis. And I think at one point I had a Dream. Oh, I had
the 64.
Yeah, I had something like that.
I think that's when it was. Because I try to remember. I remember being in all the AOL chat rooms in the gaming sections. And there was always the PlayStation versus Nintendo. And PlayStation load times are too long. And Nintendo loads right away. So it was quite the thing, I guess, back then. But I always just kind of laughed at the way people were getting so excited about it. A lot like the Trump stuff we said at the beginning. There was very polarizing for that little segment of people that were into the game.
Yeah, and I think, actually, the PS4 that I have upstairs is the first actual PlayStation that I have. Let's see here. So you're ahead of me by one, by the way. Final Fantasy VII is next as for the hottest PlayStation game of 1997. Well, it depends on who you ask. Technically, Gran Turismo sold more copies, but we say Final Fantasy VII was the more iconic game with a deep, lasting impact on those who played it. I have never played any of the Final Fantasy games, including Final Fantasy VII.
Well, I actually had both of those games, and I have a little character here that you'll see, and he was the main. He was the main. I'll do the the little trick there so you can see him. But he was the main character, Cloud Strife. But I always just loved him because his sword was huge. And I played a lot of Gran Turismo, which is probably one of the first real racing games. And they actually used live sound. So they would record each individual car, put a microphone in the engine compartment and rev it up at all different speeds. So when you drove it, it actually sounded like what the car was. So it was as realistic as you could get. And they actually just came out with a PS4 version of it. So I might have to pick it up.
Nice.
So I had both of those. I'll let you count it as one, though.
Well, because, I mean, it had nothing to do with Gran Turismo other than they mentioned it.
Okay. Well, I'm just telling you.
Well, if you wanted me to count it as two, you'd be cheating.
I said no. I just said one.
Go to the next one.
Hey, this is what you were trying to do. Oh,
would you look at that? Like I was onto something here.
This next one, it says, at a time when fewer than 40% of U.S. households had a PC, this TV-based internet service seemed a doable alternative. Plus, it allowed people to do crazy things like, as the New York Times describes, simultaneously watch The X-Files and tap out an email. And this is web TV. So I remember this. I didn't have it. It was a little box hooked to your TV, and then it had a keyboard so you could look at websites on your TV. But and I never bought it.
I never had it either, but I did sell it at Circuit City, though. And it wasn't that popular.
I was going to say.
All right, next is a car. It's a Honda EV Plus. The EV Plus was at the forefront of the original alternative fuel revolution, the one that failed. Born in 1997, the green Honda featured a battery that could go 125 miles between charges. Like many of its electronic brethren, the EV Plus was available only for lease, and when the lease was up, Honda took it back and never resold it because it was a piece of shit. Nope, never had one of those.
I don't remember seeing any of these. And maybe they were popular in certain areas of the country, but now this one I did have. Philo faxes were so 1980s. By 1997, the way to get and stay organized was to plunk down $299 for this Palm-produced electronic organizer that, per the New York Times, shared data with a desktop computer and synchronized information quickly on both machines. And that was the Palm Pilot. The real first handheld, what they called PDA, was the personal digital assistant. And I had one of these.
I had one as well.
I think it was the 3 that had the little flip over hardcover on it.
Yeah, I remember having that one too. I had that. And at some point I had one. There was like a compact one. I had some dill hole from compact walking to.
Yeah, I think those were called Pocket PC. They were more like a smaller version of Windows, and I had one of those as well.
Yeah.
And the other Palm one that they had was called the Handspring, and it had like a little cartridge in it, almost like a Game Boy, where you could expand it, whether you wanted to have a GPS or if you wanted to have, I think there was like a barcode reader if you needed to work retail or something like that, where you needed extra expansion. So I had a couple of them.
Yeah, I had a couple as well. I think I had an HP one, too, at some point.
Yeah.
In fact, I think I still, if I search through some of the bins I have down here of old tech shit that I have in the basement, I'm sure I could probably find the compact one somewhere. By the way, I just poured another beer. It's a Bell's Double, I'm sorry, it's a Bell's Special Double Cream Stout. It was featured a couple weeks ago. It's a good one. I rated it like a 4 or 4.25 or something like that. But anyway. Onward and upward here. The next one here is Al Gore, Atari Democrat. President Clinton was not an internet whiz. He sent a total of 2 emails while president. Hillary sent the rest through her personal email account. Vice President Al Gore, meanwhile, was the geek of the White House circa 1997. He kept a personal computer that he loved showing off to the press. Known as an Atari Democrat while in Congress, Gore promoted high-speed telecommunications bills and expansion of ARPANET, the technical foundation for the internet. Gore would be ridiculed by Republicans after stating in 1999 that he took the initiative in creating the internet and also discovered global warming. That's not on there, though. I don't exactly know what this is.
I think it was basically
was
just
I,
that he had a personal computer in 1997.
Oh, well, so did I.
I was going to say, so did I. I had a, like you mentioned earlier, a Packard Bell. I remember thinking it was Hewlett Packard, but it was a Packard Bell. So
I had an Acadia. Acer, yeah. Something or another. Shut up, Siri. Yeah. I'm not fucking talking to you. I hope my new iPhone doesn't accidentally trigger Siri as much as this one does. Acer. Yeah, I had an Acer something or another. And it was nice. It was like one of those charcoal colored towers. And it had the telephone that hooked up to the side of the monitor that I never used. That's good. And they used AOL.
And there's a lot of cool shit back then.
And one time I ran up like a several $100 phone bill for my parents because I was dialing, I was connecting to a number that was long distance. Oopsies.
Yeah, and I think they sold it by the hour too.
I don't know.
Before they went unlimited, before they went to the $19.99 unlimited plan, it was by the hour.
I just got all the CDs, and when one CD was ended, or when I uninstalled and reinstalled with a new CD and started over again, I knew how to play the game.
Next one I remember, and I don't know how to play chess, so this was not me, but it was Deep Blue. It says, though you couldn't stroll down to your neighborhood Circuit City to buy one, IBM's Deep Blue supercomputer truly was the hottest tech of May 1997. That's when it made history as the first ever supercomputer to beat a reigning world chess champion in a best of six matchup. So, I don't think any of us had Deep Blue, but no. I remember it beating this guy.
A supercomputer that was able to intelligently... I mean, if you think about it, 1997, 20 years ago, they were able to accomplish this. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah, now it's in your pocket.
Yeah. Next one is hailed by Time as one of the all-time top 100 gadgets, the Sony Mavica MVC-FD5. Solved the problem of sharing digital photos with a 3.5-inch floppy disk. Just snap, save to the disk, remove the disk, put the disk in a computer, upload the file, eject the disk on the computer, pass it on the desk to the next person, and voila! Your pic is going viral, 1997 style. Again, I remember selling these, and they were very popular because they had the Carl Zeiss lens on it and so on and so forth, but didn't own one myself. But again, they were really popular because of the fact that you could just load the pictures directly onto a 3.5-inch floppy disk.
Yeah, and that was back in the time when the pictures didn't take up that much space, so that disk would hold quite a bit. It says 1997, and I didn't get my first camera until 2001. I got it September 10th, 2001. I remember being so excited. And then the world changed the next day, and I wasn't as excited about my camera.
Oh, man. I think I got mine again. I think I picked one up out of box at Circuit City in probably 99 or something like that. All right. Next.
In late 1996, AOL, then known as America Online, or... quote, that company that bombarded everyone's mailbox with floppy disks and CDs, announced it would charge $19.95 a month for unlimited access to the web, just like I said a few minutes ago. It previously charged the same amount for just 20 hours worth. AOL wasn't the first provider to go this route, but it was the biggest. I remember that.
I remember that, too, and I remember taking advantage of it. In fact, one little loophole that not very many people were familiar with at the time was if you brought your own internet, so I had a separate dial-up ISP, they only charged you $9.95 a month, I think it was, for their service if you weren't using their actual dial-up servers, and I did that for quite a while.
And I remember, I think it was the 20 hours was probably the $19.95, and I seem to remember almost $5 an hour after that. It might have been in chunks after that, but it still was... it was fairly expensive.
Can you imagine being charged for your time on the internet? Today, if being charged for your time surfing the web and having, first off, having to dial up to even check your email or get an iMessage or check your social network feeds, but then to actually be limited in the amount of time you could spend doing that. Maybe it'd be better if they went back to that, but nonetheless, our lives are centered around our devices and the internet, like they, and I don't think we're going back anytime soon.
No, I mean, watching that thing dial across and hearing it dial and all of that is just kind of funny to think back that when we went from waiting to actually get online and then having the handshake, and then especially with AOL in their heyday, really when they were becoming popular, was the constant busy signals and then changing over to different phone numbers to see if you could actually get through and maybe just come back in a little while and do something else. But we certainly don't have that problem today.
True story. So next one here is the Motorola StarTAC. This personal cell phone, as it was billed, literally helped put cell phones and ordinary people's hands. It set new standards for design, perfected the modern flip phone configuration, and weighed just 3.5 ounces. I had a StarTAC. It's funny that it really was my first cell phone. I had it on, at that point, I think it was called Sprint PCS. But, yep. We had a rep that came through and offered the phones for free to people who sold their service at Circuit City. And it was, I think it was $50 a month for 500 talk minutes. And that's all it was, because, text messaging and the internet, as we see it today, definitely from a mobile standpoint, wasn't around. So I think it had, it had Snake on there, and that's the only game that was on there, the only app per se, but I let you make phone calls, and I had that. That was my first cell phone.
Yeah, I didn't have the StarTAC. I think when I was looking at them, it was like $100, and I got the free version, or the one that you paid a penny for. It was the Motorola. It was like the basic one. Didn't have quite as nice a screen. It was the Motorola DPC550, and it was the kind of like grayish looking color with the big square big angular battery on the back. And the StarTAC was kind of like the step up above it as far as the display and overall build and the slimness of it. So I didn't have the StarTAC.
Nice.
And I was on Cellular One, which became Singular, which is now AT&T Wireless.
Well, I think it became it was AT&T, but then it became Singular, and then it was AT&T again, I believe.
Yeah, I remember. I just remember going from Cellular One, I'm pretty sure, just to Singular, because I remember the little logo. But yeah, maybe AT&T was in their middle somewhere.
I thought so, but yeah, who knows?
The Apple PowerBook 1400. This machine launched in 1996 and listed for $2,499, $2,899 if you wanted a CD-ROM, perked up the then troubled Apple. While the PowerBook 1400 wasn't considered all that fast, it was considered reliable and was hailed for the innovation that was the book cover, a portion of the 1400's lid that allowed the user to insert a design element of choice. Today's laptop skin industry owes a debt. I didn't have this. This would have been way too rich for my blood back then.
Oh, me too. Me too. I think, again, 1996, I was still using my Acer. I think my first laptop, I want to say, I bought one working for Circuit City. I found I remember. So my boss had me cleaning out excess old inventory out of the back room, the warehouse. And at one point I found it was this old Toshiba. At that point it was old, but it was a Toshiba laptop. It had one of the, I forget, it didn't have a track, it didn't have a touchpad on it. It had one of those little nubs in the middle of the keyboard. I forget what they called those.
Oh, yeah. It was the pointer, but
it
it was almost like a little pencil eraser kind of sticking up between the G and the H keys, I think.
I think that was IBM's thing, but I think Toshiba licensed the technology out, if that's what you want to call it. And I remember going to my boss and being like, hey, how much for this laptop if I want to buy it? He's like, I don't know, $80, something like that. So I bought it for really, really cheap, and I used it here and there for a while. But I just remember, gosh, the image retention on it, because there was, at that time, TFT displays were the big thing, which were a new technology then, but it had the older technology on it where it just, you saw the trails when you were moving the cursor back and forth. You could just see it. It was crazy. But, that was my first laptop, and that was probably 2000, I think.
Yeah, mine would have been a iBook. It was Apple iBook. I remember it was $12.99, but yeah, it was the white clamshell, and I had that for a long time. I actually think I still have it upstairs. It doesn't work, but I have a hard time getting rid of things. And yeah, it was awesome. I'm trying to remember, probably would have been early 2000 sometime. Yeah, $12.99 was certainly better than that at that point.
Next one is Grand Theft Auto. This how the blockbuster franchise started, with 1997 release of the most violent piece of gaming on the PlayStation yet. It was hugely popular, sold 125 million copies. But again, I didn't have a PlayStation. I played the game. I had friends who had a PlayStation. We had a lot of fun with it, but I didn't own it because I didn't have a PlayStation.
I didn't own it either because I wasn't interested. Cordless phones with a giga range. I remember that. Panasonic So Giga Range is still a thing in the Panasonic universe, but in the late 1990s, it was a big thing. It promised to deliver 20 times more range than the ordinary cordless telephone, enough for you to carry on a conversation from your house all the way to the backyard.
Whoa.
I never had the Panasonic I wanted, but they were always more than I wanted to spend. I had a cheaper Panasonic. Then I ended up eventually at one point I had a nice Sony, which still was cheaper than the Panasonic.
I did actually have a Giga Range phone.
Of course you did. I used to drive around with mine in the car. When I was 16, I'd drive around just with my cordless phone. And I didn't have a cell phone at the time, but I pretended that I did. I'd like to see how far I could get down the neighborhood, and it wasn't very far.
No, not at all.
Oh, man, but I used to think I was badass driving around with that phone in the neighborhood.
Of course you did. Of course you did. Next up, Windows 95. Well, first off,
I remember that.
Yeah, I mean, it was the biggest. It was the birth of the start menu with Windows, coming from Windows 3.1. It was a huge, huge change. It kind of reinvented what the desktop. It invented the desktop, really. I mean, at the end of the day, Windows 3.1 was a collection of windows and icons. This was the first time you actually had an open space on a computer that you could place icons as you saw fit. You could put a pretty background. The default background was just clouds. It had the start menu and the start, the bar, kind of the task bar at the bottom of the screen. And this is where it all started. I think everybody at some point used Windows 95. I know I did.
It was the first GUI, the GUI, graphical user interface.
Well, but that actually was GUI.
Yeah, but not quite. Well, I guess you're right with the start menu and all that. But
because Bill Gates stole it from Steve Jobs.
Steve Jobs. That's what I was thinking. Wasn't that Next? Wasn't that the company Next? Didn't it have the big old X in it? I think it was Next.
And that perfect cube that was a piece of shit nobody bought, but he did it just so he could get back into Apple. Man, that guy was smart.
What do you mean, the cube?
Yeah. Next.
The G4 cube?
Next was a shit.
I've got one upstairs.
Well, the G4 cube is not Next, though. G4 right. cube is an Apple product. Next was a product that Steve, that in all his genius, when he had left Apple for the first time, he invented or he founded Next, and it was a piece of shit, though. It was never going to sell, but the software that was built into it was a huge value, and that's how he ended up working his way back into Apple the first time.
Yeah, that ultimately ended up where we are now, which ended up in Windows and the early Macintoshes and those, I guess all those desktop things, rather than the direct interface with the keyboard, you had the mouse and being able to do all that. I thought you said cube, and I was getting excited because I love that cube.
Not the G4 cube.
Thank goodness. I bought mine at Circuit City.
Nice. Look where they ended up. And the shitter just with CompUSA. And Best Buy is the only one that has managed to stay around barely.
Well, I tried to buy the cube at CompUSA, but the guy would never sell it to me. He'd never... They had, I think, and we might have talked about it before, where they marked up, it was $12.99. I think they had it at $14.99 because they package all this crap with it. It's like, no, I just want this for the $12.99. No, well, you got to buy it. And they marked it up and included all their warranty and crap. So I said, I'm not going to fool with this. And I went to Circuit City and I bought it. So I had the little round speakers.
They're terrible. Terrible. You had the Harman Kardon speakers. I remember selling the G4 Cube for CompUSA. What a terrible company, though. It's for the best that they're gone.
Well, I upgraded it. I followed. There was a Cube website that had forums, and I went on there and figured out how to upgrade. I changed my RAM. I upgraded the hard drive. I did all that stuff myself. Nice. It was a nice machine. Nice. So collector's item. So it's up in my closet. Nintendo 64. I always wanted one of these, but behold, the world's true first 64-bit home video game. As the Associated Press described it in 1996, the year that Nintendo 64 debuted in the United States.
You never had one?
No. No, I had the PlayStation.
Neither did I. Again, I was behind the times at that point. I think I was using... No, the Dreamcast wasn't out yet. I don't remember what the hell it was.
No, Dreamcast I had. The Dreamcast, let's see.
You know, I was pretty heavy into PC gaming at that time, so I didn't really have a console. I was one of those people that was too cool for a console.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Dreamcast, I think, was later, because I had one of those, and I want to say it was close to 2000 or so when I had it. Would have been later.
All right, next, Star Fox 64, the hottest titles for the N64 in 1997 were Star Fox 64 and Turok Dinosaur Hunter. No. Neither of us had Nintendo 64, so neither of us had that.
Yep. The DVD player, when digital video disc products, as they were first described by New York media, arrived in the United States in early 1997, most Hollywood studios weren't on board with the format. An early adopter who plunked down $500 or so for a player had to make do with Space Jam and a handful of other titles.
Oh, man. Space Jam.
That's a whole separate discussion on movies, but I have Space Jam on iTunes, but I've never seen it.
No, I don't own Space Jam, nor have I ever seen it, but I do know that it stars Michael Jordan.
Yeah, I got it on one of those $4 sales, and everybody said I had to have it, so I bought it it was $4. And I tried to get my son to watch it because it's got Bugs Bunny, but he hasn't done it yet.
Yeah, I mean, obviously I've had DVD players. I think everybody's had it. I remember getting one, and I don't know. I think I probably got it from Circuit City, 99, 2000. I probably paid $200 for the damn thing. When now they're just basically, you get a Blu-ray player for $30 if you really wanted to. But even that, I don't remember the last time I bought a Blu-ray because, again, I just order it online.
iTunes.
I don't have discs for anything anymore. All right. So last but not least is MP3s. The year 1997 was a breakthrough one for the long in development audio format. MP3.com launched and quickly became a gateway to free and cheap songs and albums. The writing was on the wall for the music industry, and Napster and iTunes hadn't even come along yet. I didn't use MP3.com, but MP3s were definitely something that I got into in the late 90s.
Yeah, I didn't use MP3.com either, but I do remember using Napster and downloading music, particularly stuff that I didn't have access to. I like to find a lot of live songs, and I have no idea where they came from. But yeah, MP3s really kind of, like I said, became the gateway for everything that we have these days. And shoot, it's hard to imagine what life was like back then.
It really is. It really is. I'd rather not.
No.
So I've taken a tally, Robert, of the amount of all the things we said we didn't or didn't own or use during that time period. Who do you think came out on top?
I'll say you, because you worked at Circuit City.
The fact that you're 10 years older is negligible in this particular sense because of the fact that I worked at Circuit City. And because I worked at Circuit City, I was able to tie you, and we each experienced 10 out of the list of things that from 20 years ago. So
not too bad.
Not too bad at all. So we tied on that one.
Well, if anybody out there has any thoughts on any of the pieces that we covered, or if you have any memories about old technology, let us know. And all our contact information is available at thetwobobs.com.
All right. How about some crazy news?
I love some crazy news. Now, I'm a big Packers fan, and this comes from out of Wisconsin.
People do the damnedest things in Wisconsin, by the way. I don't know if it's just because you can only eat so much cheese, and after that, you get bored.
Cheese and cold, it's a good combination. Well, this one involves a guy who went to go get some beer, but realizing that the store would not sell it to him because it was already after midnight, got himself into a little bit of trouble.
It's lunchtime rush at Bai's Bar in Marshfield. And Thursday, the talk of the town is what one man did at the local Quick Trip.
They're open 24/7. How do you get locked in the cooler?
I think it's hilarious that somebody would get locked in a beer cooler.
This is definitely a first.
Police say on Tuesday, 38-year-old Jeremy Van Ert walked inside the beer cooler at Quick Trip in Marshfield just before midnight.
The subject found himself locked within the beer cooler, knew that Quick Trip would not sell him any beer after midnight, so he decided to remain in the beer cooler, consumed 4 individual beers.
Van Ert also knocked down several 30 packs of
Two
beer
Bob's episode.
And is believed to have urinated during his time inside.
A customer came by the beer cooler at about 6 a.m. and saw him inside. They notified management.
Van Ert was let out and left the store. He was later arrested and charged with retail theft. A bizarre call, even for police.
This is unique. I've been here 20 years, and I've never, I've heard of people being locked inside of buildings. never inside of a beer cooler or a beer cave.
Authorities say the 38-year-old offered no explanation and just wanted to drink beer.
There's things that Mr. Vannert could have done.
He just wanted beer that much.
It's a simple problem.
But for those enjoying lunch, they say it was a childish decision.
Grow up. There's a time in everybody's life you got to grow up. You got to learn. Some people just need help, but you need to want to be helped.
Meanwhile, the guy stopping by the beer cooler at 6 a.m., he doesn't need any help. It's only the guy that slept in there and peed on the floor that needs help.
Absolutely. I mean, to go that far just so you can get drunk, I mean, you know, a little bit of a hat off to the guy. But, I mean, how much did they say he drank? Like 30?
No, it was over the next, let's see. Vannert started the night off with a bottle of Ice House, which I used to drink back in college because it had the most alcohol in it, particularly over the lights that everybody was drinking. But he soon realized he was going to need something a little stronger if he was going to make it through the night. Over the next 6 hours, he proceeded to drink 3 cans of Four Loko.
Don't you know I'm loco? Oh, that's
right. I apologize if reading the words Four Loko just made you involuntarily gag. A customer finally noticed him inside the cooler around 6 a.m. before an employee released him from his frigid prison. I can only imagine he had to be cold in there.
He had to have been. But, I mean, again, to be at the point where, God, I don't care what I have to do. If I have to hide in this cooler and spend the whole night in there so I can get my beer, I'm going to do it. I mean, I applaud his willingness to go the extra mile here to get what he wants. But, man, that had to have been a cold night, right?
Well, I mean, I was thinking about it, and it was from less than a week ago. So if you figure back to Halloween where you are, and you're not that far really from where he is, it was pretty cold. So he probably was really bundled up. And my guess is by looking at him, he probably does a fair amount of sleeping in areas that are not climate controlled. So I think maybe sleeping inside that cooler, he probably had a big old coat. And after drinking all that Four Loko in the Ice House, he probably passed out and had no idea how cold it really was in the cooler.
I mean, luckily, he got off with a misdemeanor, you know. And again, I think the article says they personally think his only punishment should be having to deal with the hangover that comes with drinking 3 cans of Four Loko. That probably is worse than the misdemeanor. You know, do some community service. Don't get in trouble for 12 months. You can probably get it pushed off your record.
Yeah, Mr. Vannert, what do you have to say for yourself?
Oh, man. Good old
That's a good one.
Classic Vannert.
I think he just wanted to drink beer.
And I don't blame him. I mean, that's what we're doing here. I prefer like a temperature controlled environment, I guess a cooler is temperature controlled, but I mean one that, you know, the goal is to keep it at room temperature. I tend to focus on that and maybe just drink the beer that I already have versus hiding in a beer cooler.
Well, hopefully Mr. Vannert is out there able to get the beer that he wants when he wants without taking such extreme measures. But at this point, that's it for episode 40.
Episode 40. Are you going to name it right now or are we just going to...
I'm going to let it be a surprise. I did that the last 2 weeks, but I was going to hold off this week because... You never know what happens during editing. There might be something in there that jumps out.
Absolutely. So don't forget to, you know, to visit us at the two bobs. Let me try that again. So that's it for episode.
My God.
Oh, there's my boy. What's his name? Yeah, Elijah.
Jaden.
Jaden Smith.
Fuck.
Don't forget to check us out at thetwobobs.com. You can find us on all the social things at Two Bobs Podcast. And also, you
go at the
chat. Huh?
Oh, yeah, that's right.
You
never mind.
You can leave us voicemails and or text messages. And what are those numbers?
I noticed that you had a phone number.
Yes, we do. It's 530-882-BOBS, which is 530-882-2627.
Woohoo!
Oh, no.
All right, good night.
We're surrounded by water, ocean water.
Our Navy is great. Our people are great.
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 You never say goodnight, by the way. I can't end the episode until you close out.
Hey,
oh my God, so many things.
Hey, Charlie, wake up.
Yeah, Charlie.
Good night.
Good night.
The preceding show was brought to you with joy by the Two Bobs. All words are their own and not of their respective employers. Music provided by Jewelbeat. To subscribe to the podcast, contact the Two Bobs, or for more information, please visit thetwobobs.com.